From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Ancient Aliens on Mars. Mike Barra joins us. But here's what's happening. The White House moving to reassure U.S. allies and Americans concerned about the sweeping nature of the U.S. surveillance practices by acknowledging that more constraints are needed to assure that privacy rights are protected. Amid a growing uproar in Europe and a protest from a key U.S. lawmaker, they said they would review intelligence collection programs with an eye to narrowing that scope. Spain, by the way, summoned the U.S. ambassador to discuss allegations of spying on Spanish citizens that it could break the climate of trust between the two countries. If proven true, earlier the Spanish newspaper El Mundo said that the NSA had recently tracked over, get this, 60 million calls in Spain in the space of a month, citing a document that it said was part of the papers obtained from ex-NSA contractor Edward Snowden. Let's check in with the Clarion Project's Ryan Morrow. This has got to be one of the most embarrassing stories I've heard, Ryan, in a long time. And now world leaders are just ticked off with us.
You know, I don't think it is actually embarrassing. I think that most government officials understood that this was going on. It's not surprising. But whenever there's a spy scandal or news about something involving intelligence, this is what happens. There's always press conferences and loud diplomatic protests, but then things go back to normal. And we know the NSA was collecting this type of information on American citizens, not the actual content of conversations, but the information of what numbers were calling what numbers. So, of course, they were doing it on the Spanish if the NSA was doing it on Americans.
Yeah, but do you think that these world leaders who are pretty concerned right now knew what was going on?
I think it was assumed, yes. Because if you're a public official, there is no reasonable expectation of privacy. And you have to assume that all sorts of countries, not just the United States, is trying to look at your email because that's just what governments do.
Why now? Why get upset now then?
Because it came out in the media. And so there's a consistent pattern I've seen over the years where whenever there's an issue about a spy getting caught or any type of surveillance program comes out in the news, we see the same show over and over again. The officials come out and they say, oh, how bad this is. But then things go back to normal. And also, I'm not buying the NSA saying that President Obama didn't know this was going on. They say that technically they didn't tell him that the leader of Germany's phone calls were being listened to. But the reason they didn't have to tell him is because it was already assumed.
Okay, Ryan, thanks. A pledge by food manufacturers to cut saturated fat levels is simply a drop in the ocean in a fight against obesity, according to a top public health expert. Morrison's, Subway, Nestle's among the firms signed up for the voluntary responsibility deal between industry and government, but a professor, John Aston, he's the president of the Faculty of Public Health, said that the approach lacked credibility. Now the Department of Health said that it would make a huge difference, is what they say. The average man should eat no more than 30 grams of saturated fat a day, while the average woman should eat no more than 20. Over the weekend, Brett Favre has now become the latest former National Football League player to reveal he is suffering memory problems after spending 20 years on the playing field. He simply forgot that his daughter played soccer. The former star quarterback said that he had become worried about the state of his memory in recent years. A new research about the effect of repeated head injuries on pro football players has only recently revealed just how devastating the long-term toll can be. And as a result, the NFL has come under fire for putting players in unsafe conditions. Jacob Bell, of course, played for the Tennessee Titans and the St. Louis Rams. He's an avid coast-to-coast listener and very interested in these repeated head injury stories on football players. He's with us here. Jacob, this situation, when you started playing football, did anybody even imagine this could happen to you guys?
George, I don't think it's a surprise that football is a dangerous sport. I mean, from day one, we're given a helmet and pads for the first time we sign up for the sport. So I think we know that the hits are bad for you.
In Favre's case, you know, and it's happening, we've seen it happen to so many other football players, they begin to lose memory. I mean, just looking at boxing, for example, the great Muhammad Ali is a shell of himself now because of this repeated beating in the heads. Is there anything they can do? I mean, can you pad these helmets any more than they already are?
You know, I think it's sad to see these guys. They're getting older and they're wearing down. They're having a lot of memory loss. The discrepancy, though, is that not every football player that plays is getting memory loss. Just like, you know, not every person that smokes gets cancer. I would say what we can do is to continue to change the rules to make it as safe as possible and, you know, contribute to research institutions that are doing the research to find cures.
Jacob, you had a good run as a guard in professional football. Are you concerned at all about yourself?
I'm absolutely concerned, George. I think everyone can take, you know, precautions in their day-to-day lives and, you know, live as healthy as possible to limit the possibilities.
All right, Jacob, you keep in touch with us. Jacob Bell, I got to know him in St. Louis. Great guy. He has since moved to California, and he's very concerned about these head injuries and these football players. In the news at coasttocoastam.com, scientists have found what they're describing as a lost world on the northern tip of Australia. What a great story, hosting at least three previously undocumented species, including a frog, a leaf-tailed gecko, and a golden skink, which they say they could have been out there for millions of years. Well, listen to this now. Gas mileage is high on cars, and so people aren't buying as much fuel. What does that mean? It means less taxes to the states. As America's road planners struggle to find the cash to mend a crumbling highway system, many are beginning to see a solution in a little black box that fits neatly by the dashboard of your car. The devices would track every mile that you would drive and transmit that information to the bureaucrats so they could possibly tax you on the miles you drive. Let's check in with investment advisor Catherine Austin Fitz. This thing could happen, Catherine.
Yes, it could, George. The more intervention the government makes in the economy, the worse the economy gets. So the more the government has to intervene to tax. And if you think this is bad, wait till you see what could be done with smart meters.
Oh, my gosh. Now, if they did this, if they taxed our mileage, would they continue taxing the gasoline so we'd still have that gasoline tax too?
I think it's going to be place to place, state to state. I think, you know, the inclination is to add taxes, not take them away. But anything is possible, and I think it'll probably be different state to state.
How are we going to get away from this, Catherine?
George, we need, in all these different issues, we need to keep asking the same question. Who's really in charge, and why are they doing this? Because, in fact, we know there's a way to run the economy that can create much greater wealth than we're creating now. But it starts with transparency. We need to understand who's really in control and why are they behaving this way.
Unbelievable. Well, then we just won't drive as much. Simple as that. Catherine, thanks so much. Well, they say that kids under two spend an average of 15 minutes a day using mobile phones or tablets. 2 in 5 babies. And they're geniuses when it comes to these devices. Unbelievable. And apps, parents worried about letting your children go trick-or-treating this Halloween? Well, you can download a new app that tracks the kids and sends alerts when they venture outside the designated safe areas. It is a free iPhone app called Track and Treat, with the N, Track and Treat. Children send a limited time link of their location via a phone number or email, and this allows parents to track their whereabouts via a web browser for the next 4 hours. So there you go. In a moment, Craig Smith joins me. We're going to talk about the Great Withdrawal. What's happening here in the United States? Craig's next with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. This hour, Craig Smith with us. Craig, of course, chairman of the Swiss America Trading Company, expert in many forms of tangible assets. He has sought after by the media for his common sense approach to breaking news. This is his sixth book we're talking about, The Great Withdrawal. Welcoming back Craig Smith to Coast. Hello, Mr. Smith.
Mr. Norrie, it's great to be back with you. It's quite an honor.
Well, let me tell you something. Since we last talked, this country is still in an upheaval. You know, we got this temporary budget thing resolved, but I don't know what that's going to do and how long that's going to last. This health care program just seems to be up in the air. People may be losing more insurance than they're getting. What's happening these days? And I noticed you talk a lot about my old hometown, Detroit, in your book. I mean,
yeah, you know,
it's unbelievable.
Funny. Yeah, it's funny when Lowell Ponte and I were talking about Detroit and how much it mirrors what's going on across the nation. We were thinking about you because we knew you were from Detroit. And, of course, you remember Detroit when it was really one of the crown jewel cities of this nation.
I was there, Craig. I witnessed the 67 riots, mm-hmm. the Tigers winning the World Series in 68. My broadcast career took off there. I saw Coleman Young elected as mayor, and he was there for, I think, 15 to 20 years.
Yeah, 1974.
I saw it all in that city. And I remember my dad, when he came there from the old country, he was just a little boy. And, you know, he started working at an early age and went to college and ended up working all his life at the Ford Motor Company. They loved Detroit. I mean, they could never get out of there. They would never move. And then, you know, I went back about a month or so ago for my niece's wedding, and it's a shell of itself. It really is. You know, some industries are doing okay. Ford Motor Company's picked up. GM's picked up a little bit. But, I mean, I don't think they can afford to get another hit anymore. But everybody's consolidated out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's truly sad what's happened to Detroit. I mean, years ago, nobody could go into the train station in Detroit and not just have their breath taken away. Now, as you know, it's just all broken out windows and basically crack houses, if you will.
Yeah, not now if their breath is taken away, it's permanently.
Yeah, and it's so sad because in the 50s, you know, Detroit was a home to close to 300,000 good paying jobs. Henry Ford had to literally recruit as far away as Iraq and Syria.
That's right.
To find enough people to get workers to build his cars. And as we know now, George, the city of Detroit is the first official U.S. city to declare bankruptcy. They went into a full Chapter 9 bankruptcy. And currently, if you split it all up amongst the people, each citizen owes $25,000 to the $18.5 billion that they owe.
And the housing out there, Craig, you could buy a dilapidated house for a dollar.
Yeah, well, and you know what's interesting about that is we write about that in the book, that there are homes that sold for as little as $1 a piece, but they were sold to a lot of cronies in the government.
That's right.
And the cronies then took those homes and put them back with Section 8 housing and got subsidies from the government to rent them out to low-income people. And so they paid a dollar for something that they basically got a tax break on and got about $800 a month income from them.
Forever.
Yeah, it just goes to show what happens, George, when this nation in 1912 went the way of progressive politics. And it started with Woodrow Wilson. It continues today. It's not going to change unless the people withdraw from it. And that's why we wrote the book, The Great Withdrawal. As you know, a couple books you and I've talked about were Crashing the Dollar, The Inflation mm-hmm. Deception, where we talked about we'd have quantitative easing forever. Now Mark Faber the other day says we're going to have QE infinity. And then we went to The Great Debasement and now The Great Withdrawal. And we're now starting to see that people are starting to withdraw from cities. People are voting with their feet. I mean, let's use Detroit as an example. 296,000 high-paying jobs today. There's less than 20,000 good-paying jobs. They've lost three-quarters of the population. People have left and gone to other cities. We're seeing this in California. People moving to states like Texas that mm-hmm. have low taxes and pro-growth job programs. And it's like Catherine said earlier on in the program, George. Whenever the government gets involved with trying to micromanage the economy, they can mess up a one-piece puzzle, for Pete's sake.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But there are some cities, I guess, in this country, Craig, that are booming, that are doing well. Dallas is strong.
Absolutely.
You know, there are some areas there that are really, really strong these days, but the rest of the country is not.
Well, and that's because you have to look at the leadership, George. If you go back to the days of Woodrow Wilson, when we started taking openly progressive attitudes towards things, when we started believing that the government could do a better job at running the economy, running people's lives, than the people could or that free enterprise could, we came off the railroad tracks of what made this nation great. And it continued into Franklin Roosevelt when we created all kinds of new programs and Social Security, continued through Lyndon Johnson with the Great Society. You remember all those programs. I can actually show you, George, that the beginning of the deterioration of the city of Detroit started in 1974 when Mayor Coleman Young took the mayorship because he went down that progressive track. He believed, look, we all want to help the people that are down and out, but you don't want to create a hammock for people to lay in. You know, corporations get in trouble. You might want to help them out with a loan, but you don't want to subsidize them or bail them out. What we did in Detroit was a mistake. We're doing it throughout the country with other things. Yet the cities that are not going that direction, they are prospering. They are doing well. And that should be a sign for every American that we need the government to get off our backs, out of our pockets, away from our children, and allow us to live as free Americans in a free society, and we'll do just fine.
Your cover on the Great Withdrawal cracks me up. You've got a devastated city from blight, but then you've got a guy hitting the wall of a bank. He's looking at his ATM, and it says, your account balance, zero. Poor guy. That's got to be frustrating.
You bet. And you know, that the reason we put that on the cover, Lowell Ponte and I discussed that for a while. Most people don't realize that the money that's sitting in the bank, you know, they think it belongs to you. It doesn't. It belongs to the bank. And we could argue that for a while, but it belongs to the bank. And then the FDIC insures your money that the bank will pay you back.
That's right.
Well, recently, the Bank of England, in cooperation with the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, put out a white paper. And they basically said, from now on, there'll be no more bailouts. We'll do bail-ins. In other words, if George Norrie has his money sitting on our bank, that will become our money. And then we'll discuss with Mr. Norrie when he can get his money back. And we did this in Detroit, George. Think about it. We went in and we bailed out the car companies and we wiped out the bondholders. Bonds were the backbone of American finance. Those were the gentleman's investment.
And they were gone, right?
They were just wiped out. Now, how do you wipe out a bondholder that is 100% collateralized by the company's material? And they did it to pay off the cronies and the unions. The unions basically walked away with the company. And next thing you know, the bondholders were wiped out. George, if that happens with the City of Detroit bonds or Sacramento bonds or other bonds throughout this country, it could have a ripple effect in this economy that could throw us into worse than a recession. It could throw us into a semi-depression.
Now, when you talk about the unions, explain that. You know, because I've always been a supporter of the working man, Craig, who happens to be in a union in some cases. So explain that.
You bet. And unions were a great, great idea. But here's what happened, George. The unions started taking dues and then using those dues to vote the way that leadership wanted to vote in general elections. And so let's take, for example, we'll just say the last election. We had two people running. And if the unions just decided to support one particular candidate, and yet the guys on the line wanted to support the other candidate, they didn't have a choice. Their money went to support the candidate that leadership wanted.
Right.
And that's where the unions break down, in my opinion. The unions have power. The SEIU, the AFL-CIO, yes, they protect the working man or have tried for years, but now I think they're taking advantage of the working man and woman by using their money to be able to influence the political outcome of elections, which have devastating consequences to the long-term stability of our economy.
Do you think it's worse now than it was 15 or 20 years ago?
I do, and I think it's starting to show by the numbers. People are leaving unions by the droves. And look, George, in Detroit, it costs $120 an hour to build a car. In South Carolina or North Carolina, it costs $80 to build the same car.
So where are you going to build it, right?
You better believe it. And that's where unions are losing their strength.
Well, and then in Mexico and China, it's probably cheaper.
Oh, absolutely. And that's, look, we got fat and lazy. We forget that Detroit, when we were booming, it was right after the Second World War. Europe was devastated. There were no railroad lines. There were no ports. Their ports were destroyed. Here we were all in one piece, and we were rock and rolling. Everybody had to buy our stuff. Then all of a sudden we had competition by the pregnant roller skate, George. It was called the Honda. And it came along.
I remember
along
that.
Remember that? We used to be referred to as the pregnant roller
skate. Hold on, Craig. We're going to hit the break. We're going to come back. Much more to talk with you about this hour, The Great Withdrawal. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Craig Smith was with us, his book, The Great Withdrawal. Craig, this weekend, had a chance to watch a Netflix movie, an old one called The Margin Call. And it was about a brokerage firm that got into deep trouble with the mortgage-backed securities, and they're trying to cover it up and hide it and everything else. And typical. But these problems that we've had since at least 2008, I mean, are there more under there that are ready to erupt?
Yes, George. I think we've only seen the tips of the icebergs. I think the icebergs are very thick, very deep. I think we're headed for worse times than we saw in 2008. I don't mean to be pessimistic, but for the last 100 years, George, the progressives have been debasing our currency. We've seen it happening. They've turned millions of people into welfare junkies. We now have more people taking a check from the government than we do working full time. That math doesn't work. I mean, even Henry Ford from Detroit said, "You will find men who want to be carried on the shoulders of others who think that the world owes them a living. They don't seem to see that we must all lift and pull together." So, yes, we have some serious problems that are coming, George, and that's why Lowell and I wrote this book. We are going to have to make a decision. We are really at a turning point right now, whether we head for a new golden age as a country, or whether we end into three or four decades of, in my opinion, total financial darkness. I mean, our Federal Reserve is creating $85 billion a month, George. And I made this comment on Fox News a couple months ago. I said, forget this talk about tapering. You're not going to see tapering. All you're going to see is more printing of government money. And now you've got Mark Fauber coming out and saying $85 billion, it's probably going to be $100 billion or $200 billion.
Every month.
$1 trillion a month.
Just printed money, just into the system,
Out of nowhere, George, and that steals from every single American.
But Craig, it seems like all these administrations, all of them, just want to keep pushing the buck off until the next generation. And they just keep sliding it away.
You're absolutely correct. And this goes back to about the only administration you can't say that about is the Reagan administration, because he did what was necessary to allow interest rates to go up, to tighten our belts, to allow a recession to occur, to squeeze all the excesses out of the system. But ever since Alan Greenspan took over, there's just been this belief that you can have prosperity forever without any ups and downs in this economy. And you cannot manage an economy this big. We're a $15 trillion a year economy. And the more the government does, the more they mess it up. If the government stayed out of this, George, we'd already be through this recession. We'd be back on the path of growth.
Probably.
And, I can assure you of it. And that's why Thomas Jefferson, he had such a great quote about predicting happiness for the future of Americans. And he said it would only come if they could keep the government from wasting the labors of the people. And that's what's happening right now, George. You and I know the waste in government. That trickles down into the private sector. Every dollar that's taken from the government is money that cannot be spent in the private sector to create a job or increase the economy.
Well, when we lost the manufacturing sector in this country too, Craig, we lost everything when that happened.
Indeed, but how did we do that? We started debasing the currency. Next thing you know, all of a sudden, labors became cheaper in different parts of the world because other nations followed, because everybody had connected to the dollar through the Bretton Woods agreements.
It's cheaper to make outside the country and ship it back than to make it here.
Right, and now that's starting to change, and that's positive, okay? But watch the government mess it up, George. I mean, we cite a study in our book. You're going to be blown away by this number, George. The median income in America today is about $53,000. It means half the people make more than that. Excuse me, half the people make less than that.
Okay.
All right? If we had not had 100 years' worth of progressive regulations and devaluations and all the things that we've been through that the progressives have brought to us, guess what the average income, median income would be now, George?
$100,000.
$330,000.
That's not a bad piece of change, is it?
Now, George, I ask you, was what they gave us worth it? Were seatbelts mandatory in your car back when you and I were kids? No. But a regulation went into place, and that cost money, and it saved lives, and that's good. But guess what? The free market would have gotten that ultimately, because the free market would have said, look at these cars. They put seatbelts in them, and these people paid for them, and they weren't mandated. And next thing you know, everybody bought them because they were safer. The government thinks they can do it better than we can. And it's not the conservative government that thinks that way. It's the progressive government. And that's why Lowell Ponte and I wrote the book, that we're going to have to be like a drug addict. We're going to have to withdraw from this cheap money. We're going to have to withdraw from believing that the government can take care of everything in our lives.
Withdrawals are tough. You know that.
Sure. And George, it's like the alcoholic. He has a drink first and makes him feel good. And then the next day he feels miserable. Withdrawal from alcohol is just the opposite. The first day you feel real miserable, but the next day you feel a lot better. And that's what we have to do. If we're not willing to withdraw from these progressive policies, we just put in a health care system, the Affordable Care Act. George, that is going to crush this nation.
Well, it's not even working, Craig.
It's foolishness on steroids. And look, we go back and I have to show you stuff in the Bush administration. And that's why I don't want to point the finger of blame anywhere. We don't believe in cursing darkness. We believe in lighting a light.
Well, there's something else afoot here, and we'll take some calls here to wrap up this hour with you in a second. There's something else afoot here, regardless of the administration. It seems to me there's a group out there, Craig, that all they care about is lining their own pockets at the expense of everybody else.
Sure, and then that's been going on for time immemorial. And that's why we should have never gone to a Federal Reserve Bank like Woodrow Wilson allowed us to do in 1913.
Some are doing very well in this economy.
Indeed,
obscenely
they are.
Well.
But yet they're doing very well in terms of a dollar that's being devaluated on a long-term basis. And, of course, it's always better to have $1 million that would be worth $10,000 than to have $0 that would be worth zero. Okay, but we can't get away from the point, George, that there are solutions to this, and yet our politicians are not talking about it. You said, they just settled this issue in Washington to get us past the crisis. But we should have never raised the debt ceiling. We should have had the debate. Instead, we kicked the can down the road for 6 weeks. We're going to have another debate. This is going to be crisis to crisis, and that's not a way to run the country. And that's why when we wrote the book, The Great Withdrawal, we wanted people to realize that this is not what our founders had in mind. And when we go back to the principles that our founders put into place, they worked, George. They made us the envy of the world. And that's why, the last time I was with you, my publisher, you said you better be careful about doing this. But the publisher said, Craig, if you want to, if Mr. Norrie wants to, we want Americans to read this book. Tell his listeners you'll give it to him for free. If that's what it takes to get people to read.
You're not doing that again, are you?
Well, last time you melted down the computers.
I almost broke you.
You melted down the telephones. But this time they've told me that I can do it, and it's supposedly going to work fine. You can go to greatwithdrawal.com. Just one word, greatwithdrawal.com, and you'll see a little button there. Or you can call 800-630-1494 and just leave your name and a message that you listen to Coast to Coast. You're a George Norrie. There's no hidden cost. There's no pitch. They pay for the postage. But here's what we're trying to do, George. We're trying to get Americans to read this book and then have open dialogues with people like you. Thank God for programs like Coast to Coast that are tackling issues like this. They're talking about issues like this. Because if we can engage the American people in an honest dialogue and get the political garbage out of the way, George, and I know it makes you as sick to your stomach as it does me.
That's why
I'm grateful that Coast to Coast stays away from the political garbage.
All right, my friend, let's see how many books you give out this time for free. I don't want to break you too much, Craig. Jeez.
Well, you almost did it the last time, George.
It was
fun for one reason. I love to see people learn, George, and I know you do too. I love to see when people see that this started 100 years ago. Do you know we're just celebrated the 100-year anniversary of the Federal Reserve? We just celebrated the 100th anniversary of federal income tax, which, by the way, was never supposed to be more than 7%.
Yeah, and both of those should be gone.
Absolutely. We should abolish the Federal Reserve. We should at least audit it, like Congressman Ron Paul is saying. What do they have to hide if we're supposed to be a transparent government? I mean, how come we're not auditing the Federal Reserve? They're metadata-ing all of our phone calls, as one of your earlier guests said. They're collecting all this data. They were using the soft power of progressiveness by making us dependent on government. Now that that's not working and the people are rejecting it, they're forcing it down our throats. The IRS scandal. I mean, George, can you imagine a government that basically silenced an entire Tea Party movement by not giving them exempt status before an election?
Unbelievable.
That is a scandal extraordinaire. But why did it happen? Because the people weren't informed until after it happened. That's why we do what we do, George. And greatwithdrawal.com will give you a little snippet of the book and show you how we can stop that if we get involved.
Let's go to Grand Rapids, Michigan. Lee's with us. Lee, thanks for holding. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, Craig.
Mm-hmm.
The point is petty at best, but the roller skate was the Volkswagen. I owned one back in 68.
Well, you know, it's funny. I've heard people say it about the Honda as well. And, of course, the original car that first came to compete with us was the Toyota and the Nissan, as you probably remember. But the Volkswagen is an interesting car because it was the people's car, and of course it came from Germany. And what's funny about that is we're gonna experience something that Germany experienced. We're gonna see hyperinflation like they did in Weimar Germany.
Mm-hmm.
People forget 1919 after the First World War, 1920, 2021 were very fine years for Germany. Even though they had war reparations, they were printing money and everything was going smooth. By 23, they had hyperinflation. And George, hyperinflation, the exact definition is 50% increase in prices within a 30 calendar day period. We could see that in America, George. Now, we'd have to take dramatic steps to stop it, which we couldn't do now. The Fed has themselves in a corner. You can guarantee that we're going to have inflation, and we're going to have a lot of it for a good period of time.
When inflation starts, is it going to put the brakes on whatever we have left of an economy?
I don't think they can, George. I don't think they can. I think they're going to have to work with inflation. That was a headline article in the New York Times.
I mean, prices are going up.
Oh, certainly. And here's what's interesting. The prices are only going up on things that we use every day. But then they put computers into the equation and other things that are becoming less and more powerful, and they tell us we don't have any inflation. George, we have been exercising what's called financial repression for years. We're keeping the interest rates below the rate of inflation. As a direct result, we're stealing money from the American people in a way that they don't even realize is being stolen from them. We did it after the Second World War. And what did it end up doing? It ended up giving us 16% inflation rates in 1980. You remember, George, 22% interest rates.
I remember that. During Carter?
Oh, it was horrible. And this is the problem this time. They've printed so much, George. George, we now have $100 trillion worth of liabilities in America. We have $17 trillion worth of short-term debt. And we're getting ready to raise that now. Do you know this recent thing we just went through, George? There was no limit put on. There was a time frame put on it.
That's
it has to be done by February 6th, but between now and then, the president can borrow as much as he wants.
We're going to go through the same thing in February, aren't we?
Absolutely, and this time I think it's going to be worse.
Go ahead.
And the world is watching us, George. That's the critical part. The world is paying attention this time.
Let's go to Dave.
China's already downgraded us.
David's in Florence, Arizona. Hey, Dave, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Hello, America.
Hi, David.
After 54 years of unbelievable experiences, maybe tonight I have a chance to share what I've learned by very hard experiences.
Okay.
This country is really not in a recession. This country has been actually shut down. I know that as a fact because I've been one of many victims. The federal bureaucracies are more like a royalty The old Federalist Party that was founded by Hamilton, it couldn't get an open monarchy. They tried to talk Washington into being the first king of America, and he was pretty outraged. So what they did is they established a secret monarchy in the executive branch. That's how they stole our mining claims. That's how the Forest Service and Department of Interior wiped out the small miners. They wiped out the small ranchers, the medium-sized ranchers. They've done a great deal of harm to the small ranchers. They designed their interstate highway system to hurt the little towns. This country is very badly out of balance, and that's why it's not working. Back when there was balance between the little guy and the big guys, this country thrived.
Well, that's true. There was balance then, Craig. That balance is gone. He's right.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, George. And that's why things have to change, or else you'll end up with a revolution on your hands. And we believe that revolution will come in the form of a ballot box, not in the form of an ammo box.
Let's hope.
And we believe that it's going to be a move away from progressivism. What this gentleman just said is right. But that was the direct result of the progressives micromanaging things. And I hate to keep blaming this all on the progressives, because there's other components. But the majority of it is an ideology, George. They believe that they can do a better job running your life than you can, George. They believe.
Well, I think they've all screwed up, Craig. I mean, I do. I mean, you tilt more conservative than most, of course. But I think all of them have screwed us up.
Well, indeed. But see, you got to remember, if we hadn't have started a welfare state, it would have meant that we could have stayed on the gold standard. The minute you start a welfare state, you cannot stay on a gold standard. That's why Nixon had to close the gold window in 1971. Now, if we had not closed the gold window, your dollar would have been strong. And that guy that put away $10,000 in his savings account, it'd still be worth $10,000 worth of buying power. Instead, today it's worth $1,000 worth of buying power. Why? Because we debased the currencies as a direct result of allowing a Federal Reserve to run rampant to support a welfare state.
Well, but what do we do with those who are underprivileged?
Ah, and that's the key, because you're like me, George. You don't want to see people go hungry.
Heck no.
You don't want to. But it's like, for example, the great changes that we made to the welfare system during the Clinton years, and with Newt Gingrich at the speakership. Those were all done away with in 2009 when the new administration took over. Why did we do that? People have no problem working or wanting to get training in order to get their food stamps or to get government subsidies or Section 8 housing. We're making it too easy, George. And look, I'm all for helping somebody, but we're not helping. It's like Lowell always says, you know, the government breaks your legs and then offers you a set of crutches and thinks they've done you a wonderful thing. We're not helping people, teaching them how to be dependent on the government. We need to be a self-sufficient people.
Well, we need that middle ground, Craig, for sure. Your website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com, The Great Withdrawal. And as you know, you can get it for free if you can get to that website. Here's the toll-free number, 800-603-1494. I'll be back in a moment with Mike Barra as we talk about his latest work, Ancient Aliens on Mars.